This is The Reason Podcast, and I'm your host, Nick Gillespie. Please subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, iTunes, Google, Spotify, SoundCloud, Reason.com, and rate and review us wherever you find us. We appreciate the feedback. Today, I'm talking with journalists Leah McSweeney and Nancy Rommelman, who have a controversial new video blog called Me Neither, or Me Neither, up at YouTube, where they engage what they've called toxic femininity. We're going to talk about that, 21st century feminism, and the Women's March, which takes place this weekend, among accusations of anti-Semitism that McSweeney herself brought to light at the website Tablet in a blockbuster story about the event's organizers in early days. We're taping live in New York, so expect to hear sirens in the background and shouting and screaming. If we stopped every time we heard one, we would never get anything done. So, ladies, thanks for joining the Reason Podcast.
Thanks for having us, Nick.
So, Leah, why don't you, what is the point of the Me Neither? Is it neither or neither? How do you guys pronounce it?
Hashtag me neither.
Yeah.
Is what okay. We've been saying.
It's up at YouTube, but Leah, why don't you, what is the point of that video chat series? What are you hoping to do with it?
You know, look, me and Nancy, we met because we had both written articles about Asia Argento, and we kind of became friends on Twitter, and then we met at the Reason Gala in LA, and we kind of started talking, and it turns out that we both have very similar views on what's going on in today's world regarding feminism, Me Too, et cetera. So we were like, why don't we just start recording these and having these conversations and, you know, seeing if maybe other people feel the same way we do.
Well, and the first episode went gangbusters. Nancy, do you want to talk about what happened in the wake of that?
About why it went gangbusters?
Yeah.
So we started in, I think, late December. We'd done 3 half-hour episodes about, you know, the excesses of the Me Too movement, about, you know, who is a sexual predator and who isn't. And I think about a week and a half ago, we posted the third one, and we'd had like 2,000 views total. And I said to Leah, like, let's try to get up our views this week. So we're now at about 60,000 views because a former employee of my husband's coffee business in Portland found the YouTube series and wrote a letter to my husband's staff, present and former, saying that my vile, dangerous, and grossly misguided YouTube series created an unsafe work environment for Ristretto Roasters employees, and she felt it was her job to get some signatures and take it to the media, which she did. And within 48 hours, it became one of these things. I don't have to fill it in. You know what happens.
Well, our audience doesn't necessarily.
Okay, well, so within 48 hours, there were, you know, 4 feature articles, and then nationally, and Yahoo, and the TV stations, and some customers of my husband's. I mean, thousands of I didn't read thousands of comments, but you know, we'll never spend another penny, and your wife is a rape apologist. You need to divorce your wife. It was just, oh yeah, you need to break up with your wife. We were called I don't know how many times I've been called a cunt, more in this week than ever.
Well, you have next week to look forward to.
It's just, you know, it's the outrage culture. It, in my opinion, it's just an old fashioned, you know, disgruntled former employee using the modern tools of outrage culture.
Right.
It's unfortunate, but we're not stopping the show.
Well, talk about, you know, what is your guys, and obviously, I mean, you are aligned pretty much, but what is your take then on kind of feminism in the current moment? Like, where, you know, what's wrong with the Me Too movement?
Exactly what happened to Nancy is what's wrong in general, you know, and that is that we cannot have a discussion. And, you know, I don't think we were saying anything radical. I mean, to talk about Asia Argento and Rose McGowan being fraudulent and hurting the Me Too movement, I don't know who would want to really argue that or contest that after everything that we have seen.
So what, explain that for a second. I always read it as I saw it, Asia Argento, but it's
Okay,
so what came out about her that kind of discredits her as a spokesman, and then right. Rose McGowan?
Asya had had sex with a 17-year-old in California. The age of consent in California is 18. I think that's really stupid, but whatever. So it was that's a criminal act. She could have been charged with whatever, rape, I guess. I don't know. But the guy that she had sex with or raped or whatever, he was a child actor that was in a movie with her. And so she's known him since he was 8 years old. And that's my issue with it, because it's like creepy as fuck.
And then he was shaking her down.
And
right?
she paid him off to stay silent, because when she came out and started being like, you know, Miss Right, self-righteous, like Puritan, he was like, hold on, you know, you're a sexual deviant. What are you talking about?
And then what about Rose McGowan?
Well, I mean, Rose is just, I don't know how. Well, then it came out, she ended up selling text messages, all right, Asya admitting that she had sex with this guy. And these women just turn on each other so quick. I mean, they have no integrity, none.
I mean, it goes back further than that. So the movie that this little boy was in when he was seven was based on Laura Albert, who was a big hoaxer, who I've written about.
Yeah, and who's better known as J.T. Leroy.
And I actually was at the rap party for this movie, The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things, where Aja Argento was there, where the little boy was like lolling on a bed with Marilyn Manson. And I asked Aja, because I kind of knew there was no J.T. Leroy, but it hadn't come out yet. I was like, so can you tell me, like, is he real or not? And she just gave me this look like, oh, you know, you're just so unhip or whatever. But in fact, she'd been on the J.T. Leroy hoax. She knew there was no J.T. She and Laura Albert playing J.T. called the New York Post, I think it was the Post, and said that Aja was pregnant with J.T. Leroy's baby. All right. So these are people that are happy to, you know, sort of do this stuff in the media. Great. It shines their star. Fine. They're crazy people. It's Hollywood. But when the whole Me Too movement came out, and McGowan, whose story I don't know as well as Leah might, and Aja, both had long time, somewhat, or I know Aja had consensual relationship with Weinstein.
With Harvey Weinstein.
Right. And yet they were very, very happy to be this sort of heralded, you know, distressed maidens of the Me Too movement, and really got a lot of sunshine. Now, that's not really okay. When Aja got busted, she did everything that Weinstein did: denied, paid off, intimidated. So how can she be a hero to this movement? And why are we pretending that she is?
So, I mean, that's, you know, celebrities always fail us, right? I mean, they're, they're idiots. Our idols always have feet of clay and all of that kind of stuff. But then what is it about the Me Too movement that is, that you think has gone off the rails, Leah?
Well, look, it was started by Tarana Burke, a Black woman from the Bronx, who has dedicated her life to helping people, women, young women who have been abused, who have been raped. And she's dedicated her life to this. So to watch these women, and I've had her on my podcast, but to have these other women step in and make it about them and not use their platform to help the women who she was trying to help with Me Too. I mean, it was like sickening. Like, Asya was at the Cannes Film Festival and, you know, was standing next to Ava DuVernay, who's amazing. And Asya was like, you know,
she
Harvey
gave a huge speech there about
exactly. Yeah. But Asya was like, Harvey, you know, raped me here 20 years ago and he'll never be able to do this again. And everyone was like, what's she doing? She did not once do you ever see Tarana, when she has a moment to speak, talk about herself. She's talking about how to help victims, how to help survivors. And the celebrities, especially Asya, no, they just want all the attention for themselves.
So do you think, what's it been about a year?
Two years now.
That all of this stuff has come out about Harvey Weinstein and
than a year. I think it was last November. Last November.
But I mean, has it generally been a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, that women are talking more openly about, sexual assault
Both, right? Yeah. So if people do feel that they have, you know, legitimately had a serious problem, they've been assaulted, they've been raped, and this has makes them feel that they can, people are going to believe them more. That's great. But then what has happened to the sort of fluid definition of what assault is? And are, you know, and that's something that we sort of start questioning, and that's where we get in trouble.
So this is the difference between, say, like Harvey Weinstein on the one hand, who's a monster, and somebody like Aziz Ansari.
Aziz Ansari, that young woman that went on the date with him and then told her story to babe.net. She, in her article, says, I had to ask around and ask my friends if that was assault. I wanted to be validated for feeling bad. And I came up with the conclusion that that was sexual assault. No, you don't get to change the definition of something like that. That was not sexual assault. So when mainstream media and, you know, starts picking up a story like that and, you know, changing the direction of what assault means, it is such a disservice to people who have been sexually assaulted, because there's a giant group of people going, that's not sexual assault. Like Ashley Banfield went on the air on CNN and just like ripped that girl a new one. It was amazing.
Right.
She's like, you're
and
hurting.
Then she was age shaped.
And then she was, oh my God. And then that the blogger, I'm not going to call her a journalist. I don't even know what to call her. Katie Way, who wrote the story, wrote, yes, like made fun of her lipstick, made fun of her age. I mean, can you imagine? Disgusting.
So you both have written using the term or toxic femininity, or I guess toxic feminism. What do you mean by that? Or like, is this where the dose makes the poison? So, you know, are you fundamentally anti-feminist or anti a particular type of feminism?
I'm definitely not anti-feminist. I'm a feminist. Like I.
How do you define a feminism?
Well, look, I think just like the idea of women being equal to men and women being able to do the same things as men. And I could be like, I could get dirty and I could play sports and I could like, you know, fuck the way I want to fuck. And like, I don't have to like, you know, worry about being called a slut. And like, just that kind of brand of feminism always resonated with me.
So, I mean, a basic equality, not just before the law, but also kind of cultural freedom.
Completely.
And cultural equality.
Yeah. Even though I do obviously want the guy to pay for everything and hold the door.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, the men, they pay for it one way or the other. So, yeah. Nancy, you know, you and I are, Leah, how old are you?
36. You're
okay. So, and we're all, you know, we're open, we're post-age, you know, we're both in our mid-50s,
yep,
for God's sake. But you certainly remember, you know, growing up in the 70s, you know, there was a radical cultural freedom that was expanding, like, you know, like nobody's business. But it's also true, like gender roles were really fucked up. They were really stultifying, don't you think? Or maybe not. Maybe maybe they were more for men than women. I don't know. But this, and you know, and when you look back at that first, you know, I guess it's considered second wave feminism, the books that started coming out in the late 60s and early 70s. And whether it's Fear of Flying or Memoirs of an Ex-Prom Queen, et cetera, like the world they were describing at the beginning of the 60s is really retrograde.
I guess when Leah was just, first of all, I think when someone says, are you a feminist? I'm like, define feminism. Mm-hmm. Because there are so many sort of, you know, offshoots to it now. And some, like, for instance, you know, the people that are attacking my husband's business who are radical feminists, I certainly would not say that I am part of that cadre. But even when Leah was saying just now, it's like, you know, I want to, you know, we can do the same things as men. We can fuck like we can do that. I sort of never felt that I couldn't do all those things. Mm. Now, maybe, yes, you're standing on the shoulders of people that made strides for you. Sure. But if you've never felt that you were not equal, then to have to say like, wow, yes, I'm this thing now. It's like, okay, sure, of course. I believe that we should treat all people the same and there shouldn't be any limits on that. And if that means I'm a feminist, well, sure. But the other stuff gets kind of problematic.
So, you know, one of the things that comes up a lot in contemporary discussions of feminism is intersectionality, which is, you know, it came out of academic writing on feminism a couple of decades ago, I guess. But and it's sort of the idea that and you correct me, please, if you think I'm mischaracterizing it. But it's the idea that, you know, people have multiple identities that kind of stack on one another, and intersectionality, the way that it gets discussed now, no single identity is complete, but people look for a kind of a rank ordering of different levels of oppression. And I want to bring this up because this seems to be one of the places where feminism is moving in that direction, certainly in an academic setting. And Leah, you wrote a piece about the Women's March, which you expose, and later the New York Times and other people picked this up. It was originally a Tablet magazine, co-authored by Jacob Siegel,
yes,
about the early organizers of the Women's March and their anti-Semitism and kind of the exclusion of white women in favor of women of color. Can you summarize kind of what your story was about, what it revealed, and how that you know is another thing that you guys talk a lot about?
So and just quickly, I'm not a intersectionality scholar or anything like that, isn't it? And I don't know 100%, but it's like a theory or a way of analyzing how it's like, if you know, a woman is black, she's not only dealing with being, right, a woman, but then she's also dealing with being black, right? And that's how it came about, I think. So I don't know if it was ever intended to end up being used the way it is right now, which is like to take people hostages in a way. And definitely with the Women's March, what I walked away thinking overall was like, well, it was a group of white women that were so concerned about being diverse and being intersectional that they allowed women who, yes, one was Spanish and one was Palestinian and one is black, but they allowed these women to come in. And even though they were not the right women for this job,
what do you
because
mean by
of
that?
Their anti-Semitism, okay, which was very apparent from very early on, these women feared criticizing them because they did not want to look racist, which is crazy to me because it's like you can definitely find another Muslim woman and another Hispanic woman and another black woman, whoever you want. There are definitely women out there that would be great for that job and would be great at leadership. These were not the women. But because of that fear and because of the political climate that we're living in, they knew how it would look. So they just did not say anything until they couldn't hold it in anymore, I guess.
And what was the Nancy, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's really kind of a parallel when we were talking about Argento and McGowan. It's like you've got a good idea, though, you know, what exactly the Women's March was supposed to accomplish. I'm not sure. It was a little diffuse. But, you know, you've got, and instead of like then addressing with the people that could maybe do real change, you've got these figureheads that want the sunshine for themselves and are sort of illegitimate leaders. I mean, that was really a casting call almost,
yes,
in terms of the Women's March. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's all sort of falling apart. I read today, I think the Democratic Party just like canned their support.
Yeah.
For the Women's March.
Yeah, Leah, do you want to take us? I mean, we're recording this on Wednesday, before the Women's March. But what kind of official support has kind of evaporated?
I think what happened was after, you know, me and Jacob's article and Tablet, then the New York Times came out, right? And that legitimizes it, I guess, for a lot of people, not for me, but and then
now you read the Daily News, right?
And then it kind of continued, but then even more recently, Bob Bland and Tamika Mallory went on The View, and Megan McCain.
Those are two of the
co-presidents.
Bob Bland is a
woman. She changed her name.
Designer.
Yeah. And
kind
she's
of a
never,
great name, actually. She's to be quite honest, it's kind of a punk name. It is. Yeah.
She's never done activism before. She comes from a fashion background and did the Nasty Women t-shirts and saw what kind of money you could make.
And this is what the Women's March was kind of about. I mean, it was a recoiling from Trump, right? Because he was, you know, pussy grabber in chief, et cetera. Okay.
I don't know.
Do you guys, you're not bothered by Trump, or at least not in
no,
any.
I don't like wake up and like think about how much I hate him like everyone else does. Like I don't understand. Like people just need to stop putting so much energy into it.
Okay.
That's how I feel about him.
So, but in terms,
I thought the fast food stuff was great.
Yeah.
I'm just not. I don't know.
Well, talk about, Bob Bland and Tamika Mallory went on The View and what happened,
and
which is
Meghan McCain gave them hell. Well, I mean, Whoopi and the other woman, Sunny, they were both really questioning them, but Meghan McCain just came out and was like, boom, boom, boom.
And the form the anti-Semitism took in particular is kind of a support for Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam, right? Which, and Farrakhan has a long record. I mean, he's like the Steve King of anti-Semitism.
So
he's got a long
basically
record.
What, you know, Jacob and I uncovered was that at the very first meeting, Tamika and Carmen Perez, the other, you know, co-founder, co-president, she, you know, these two women were basically like verbatim, like repeating the kind of stuff that's in his book, The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, which is not historically correct.
Right.
About
but it's the
Jews.
Idea that Jews ran the slave trade,
exactly.
That Jews are always keeping the black man down.
Exactly. So, and that's basically what we found has been the overall arching, like that's their idea. And that's what they've been telling a lot of the women that are in March or that are at the higher ranks.
And so on The View, it did not go well for them. So everybody is kind of distancing themselves.
Well, because Tamika was, you know, Meghan McCain said, do you condemn this? And she's like, I don't agree with it. And she's like, but do you condemn it? And she's like, I don't agree with it. So, like,
well,
you know.
Let me flip the table. I mean, is this, Nancy, is this kind of like, you know, why should she? I don't know. You know, it's like, is this like, you know, your husband's ex-employee calling him out because of his connection to her? Is that like, you know.
Interesting analogy. Well, I mean, look, people are allowed to believe what they believe. If she wants to believe that Farrakhan has, you know, helped a lot of people and helps her, but she should be frank about it, I would think, right?
That's how I feel.
And then, you know, that's a little bit of a weaselly way out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have always been like, if they were just honest from the get-go about the relationship with him and their relationship with Nation of Islam, but they weren't. They tried like dancing around it, like, they were like, oh, we, you know, Linda Sarsour was like, I've never even met him. And maybe she hasn't, but was speaking at one of his marches. Mm-hmm. The thing is, if they want this and, you know, they want people to understand their relationship or have understanding and compassion for this, you know, complicated relationship that they have with him because he does some good for the black community where other people won't step in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and, you know, Tamika finds solace in that or respects that or whatever. But then they are so radical and so like black and white thinking about women who are conservatives and, you know, and everything else.
Do
and
you,
Trump. It's like, if you think, what if people are like, hey, I think Trump does some good stuff, regardless of all this racist stuff he says. They don't accept that.
Or sexist stuff.
Right.
They are so completely intolerant of that. They want their opinions, whether I'm talking about the people that were, you know, attacking us or these, they want their opinions to be respected. And, you know, though they may not want to have a real discussion about it, but your opinions, no.
Yeah. Well, Nancy, you were, you were conscious through the Clinton presidency. And
yes.
A lot of people said that, you know, particularly the way things kind of wrapped up and, you know, the meaning of his affair and the power differential and all of this kind of stuff has undergone at least two or three major kind of revisions by Hillary Clinton, by Monica Lewinsky, by Bill Clinton himself. But a lot of people towards the end of the 90s, I think Gloria Steinem wrote a famous New York Times op-ed, which is now known as like the one free grope policy. And I know a lot of people, a lot of women and feminists who were like, you know, this revealed feminism, kind of like the face of modern feminism, to be a wholly owned kind of interest group of the Democratic Party. So it's because like nobody was saying that when it was, you know, Republican politicians who were scumbags.
Well,
or
he
anything.
Was their guy. I mean, she Clinton was their guy.
So, I mean, do you think that's part of the problem with the women's march in general or with where kind of the cultural conversation about feminism is, where it's really not about letting women speak. It's about having certain women with certain political viewpoints. They're sanctioned. They can speak for all women. But then if you're a conservative, if you're, you know, you just don't give a shit about Trump.
Well, I think the Women's March proved that because, as Leah reported, like they did not want, if you were pro-life, if you were a conservative, or they didn't want you there. Like they told you, we don't want you here, which makes no sense. It's a Women's March. My problem with the Women's March is,
just for the record, you're totally pro-abortion.
Huh, that's an
Maybe
interesting
not.
Question.
Okay, yeah.
I'm totally pro other people having an abortion if that's what they want to do. I think people should be smarter about it. I think if you're going to get pregnant, you know you're pregnant and want it, like maybe do it a little earlier and maybe don't use it as birth control. But, yeah, you know,
nobody that would really use it.
But, you know, the whole
control.
Thing, like, you know, it's like, you, judiciously.
Okay. People need to stop treating it like it's just a fucking like trip to the nail salon. Yeah. It's not.
For sure.
All right. But I'm pro-choice.
I don't know anybody who does that. I mean, that's like a right-wing talking
no,
point.
No, I believe me.
With the exception of some Russians I knew who were raised in the old Soviet Union. Everybody I know is serious.
I saw a bumper sticker, some young women, they're like, you know, abortion doctors are like our heroes or something. I'm like, girls, just go get some birth control.
You gals are just like right-wing conservatives, right? This is like your
alt-right, right?
Yeah, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, but was there a time, Nancy, you know, where you think feminism was unequivocally a force for good and for kind of leveling and equalizing, or has it always been kind of squirrely?
I'm not smart enough to answer that, or not aware of what it went through. I have, you know, read certain things that said, you know, you have certain rights because these women did that. Then, and I could probably agree with that without even knowing the history of that. Yeah. I just don't feel like anybody's keeping me down.
Yeah.
No.
I mean,
so where does that sense of social progress, or where does that reality of social progress come from? Because, you know, in 1960, women, you know, if you were smart and kind of medically inclined, you would become a nurse. You wouldn't be a doctor. You know, and now, you know, more women, I think, graduate from medical school.
So you
both have daughters, mm-hmm. right? You know, like their lives are probably going to be better than yours because everybody, you know, I mean, things keep getting better.
Right.
Is that things are too good. Things are too good. Why are upper middle class white women marching like to fight oppression? What are they talking about? We are higher on the totem pole than white men.
Explain that a little bit.
I can say anything on this podcast, right?
Absolutely.
Listen, men want power. They want money so they can fuck whatever women they want. That's it. So to me, I'm like, well, we're in control. I mean, the black women are the least protected out of everybody. I definitely believe that. I mean, I 100% believe that.
So where does the progress come from? You know, that your daughter is going to have more choices than you had conceivably.
Yeah, she's probably going to have more choices than the guys that she's graduating with at this point. I mean, boys are definitely suffering like they are. The suicide rates and, you know, I mean, they've. Definitely things are better for women right now than men.
But so why? I mean, like, what?
I really don't know.
I don't know where you guys think progress, you know, because this is, you know, and I obviously Reason is a libertarian outfit. And, you know, part of it, we'd say, you know, there are certain laws that change. I mean, like when you get rid of de jure, you know, legal segregation, things change by the government, you know, things change. But then there's also, you know, new technologies, new ways of living, new ideas.
Because women are having kids later, right? They're more focused on their careers. I mean, we used to not be able to like own property without, I mean, that's crazy, you know, and the strides that we've made even in the last, you know, 40 years, 50 years, it's kind of crazy.
But I think it is a good question to ask, why then, especially, you know, in academia, and we've seen it, why are women saddling themselves with what they perceive to be these gross inequities? Like, I am beleaguered. I am a victim of the patriarchy. All men are potential rapists. Like, why are they burdening themselves with these? What's the point? How is this going to help them?
I mean, I think, and I don't know why, but feminism right now is so centrally focused on victimhood.
Yes.
And it's like gives them power. I have no idea why, but it's just weird.
Do you think that's a broader... you know, are we, I mean, a lot of people have been saying this for years now that, you know, we've become a victim culture where we kind of fetishize, or if not fetishize, we focus on victimization as opposed to as a means of empowerment rather than just kind of empowerment.
When you present yourself as a victim, you are asking for sympathy. And it's very, very manipulative. I've written about a lot of people who are, you know, these sociopaths who have presented themselves as beleaguered, and then they get people to give them things that they want. I don't know if this current movement, and of course, we're talking about a small swath, but they're very loud, they're very angry, they're throwing tantrums, and they are demanding that you see them as having a right to special consideration, whether it's intersectionality or whether it's, you know, you can't say this to me on campus. I don't understand why they're fighting for their victimhood. I don't get it.
Talk a bit about your book that came out. And I know you recorded a podcast with Catherine Mangu Ward a while ago. It's called To the Bridge. And talk about it, because that, I mean, it's a book about families, really, mm-hmm. more than, I mean, it's not simply women, but there's a mother in it who commits murder of her own children.
Yeah, it's called To the Bridge, A True Story of Motherhood and Murder. It came out in July 2018, and it is about a woman who took her two small children, ages 4 and 7, to a bridge in Portland, Oregon, dropped them over. Her 4-year-old son died. Her daughter survived. She was caught the next day, and I just sort of had to know how this happens. Emergency. It turned out to be a very interesting, twisty, turny story where, in fact, there were several people playing the victim on a very insidious level. And people don't know what to do. Like, do I believe my eyes? Should I offer more help? And what happened, because nobody checked it, because people kept believing this, you know, two kids get thrown off a bridge. So you can't let these people that are lying to you, you know, spoil the whole system, whether it's a family or whether it's Me Too or whether it's, you know, whatever. Like, you can't believe that stuff. You have to trust and verify. Yes, I'm quoting Ronald Reagan here. And if you told me, I would have done that 30 years ago.
Yeah, no, I'm guessing this is kind of a first that you're saying it approvingly.
But, yeah.
Can I ask, and does it matter? Do you guys have personal stories of sexual assault, and does that inform your identity as a woman, or should it? Is that something that you need to bring to the table when you talk about kind of gender issues or the Me Too movement?
Well, that's the other thing, is I do have that. I do have that in my history, which I've been open about. And I talked to Toronto Burke about, and like how I healed from it, which was like taking ownership, which people, they might think that's crazy. But I was like, guess what? I can like make sure that I like never pass out like drunk at a stranger's house, like, or at a house with strange people ever again. And like, then my chances of that happening are going to like get a lot smaller. Mm-hmm. Not to say that wasn't wrong, but like I can like take steps to like keep myself safe, you know? I don't, and again, I'm gonna go back to Toronto Burke, because to me, she's like the visionary for all of this. And, you know, she came out not that long ago and said, I think it was after the Brett Kavanaugh stuff, when we saw people, girls coming out screaming, I've been raped. I mean, like, people were going insane. I'm like, this is like, these people all need therapy so badly.
And you're saying that it was anything in the Kavanaugh hearings or what he was accused of for you, none of that rose to a level of offense.
She was pushed on a bed.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And
that's
who,
crazy. That was Democratic Party weaponizing Me Too. And using this woman who was clearly not stable, if she really thinks that she has trauma 40 years later, 30 years later from being pushed on a bed. I mean, oh my God. And her hair in the glasses and needing the big bottle of Coke.
Now you're Ashley Banfield in her. what's going on here? God, women, keep it together.
It was just,
yes,
yeah. It was,
keep it together.
She was very, yes. Yeah, exactly.
Keep it
Thank
together.
You.
And just like take responsibility.
I mean, also, I would not want to be judged for like some dumb shit I wrote in my yearbook in 12th grade. Oh my God, I was a lunatic back then. Are you kidding me? We should all, even if he did do that, I don't think that was enough to like say, no, you're not allowed to like, you know, get this job.
Why do you think that the, you know, most Republicans didn't make that argument? They said it didn't happen.
Yeah.
I mean, is that just because they're like pussies? They don't want to, you know, say.
They can't use any kind of gradation, because then they're just going to get, you know, screwed, right?
Yeah, I couldn't say that.
Look, I'm going to go out on a limb and say just about every woman has had some sort of bad sexual thing happen to them, starting at like age, you know, 8 in my case. Now, I'm fortunate, you know, I was not in a terrible, terrible situation. But then you kind of like have to move on.
Yeah. No, you absolutely
move on.
Yeah.
And you can't, like, if some guy, I think we talked about this. It's like, if some guy grabbed my ass at a party 10 years ago, am I going to be talking about this now? Why? For what? Only because then I think I might be able to get something from it, right? Some sort of exception, or, you know, you have to understand.
And I mean, to be clear, you guys don't buy into any in any way, shape, or form the idea of toxic masculinity. I mean, that's what toxic femininity is.
I think it exists. Yeah, yeah, of course. Okay.
But it's not the baseline condition of men, because this seems to be what. Yeah.
And I have had 3 discussions in the past month where I mentioned toxic femininity, and all 3 people, well, one person said, no, there's no such thing. I said, but there's toxic masculinity, but they're not. And she said, yeah, she wouldn't accept that. And everybody else said, what's that? Hmm. I mean, I think it can cover a lot of things, but I think playing the victim and manipulating things for your benefit is toxic, whether you're a man or a woman.
Leo?
You know, I'm not sure if you guys saw this, like, Dave Chappelle skit where he talks about how he had, like, $10,000 in cash in his backpack and gone on a train and then knew what it was like being a woman, because we basically have a pussy and everyone wants it and whatever. I mean, you have to – he said something like that. But that's how it is. I mean, do we want to change that? I don't. Like, I don't want to change that. I'd rather deal with – you know, the possibility of being raped, and I'd rather be free, and I'd rather, like, have that power over men. I mean, that's just my own personal beliefs. I mean, that is. I don't want things to change in terms of that. Why would anyone? I don't. That's why women can sell sex. Men can't really sell sex, right? Men go to women to buy sex because we have a commodity.
All right. I'm not sure how to answer that, or I don't need to, right? I mean, you weren't asking a question anyway, so.
It's rhetorical.
The best place to watch your video series is on YouTube, and the channel is called Me Neither, or Me Neither.
Hashtag Me Neither.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Even though I feel like when you put that in.
What?
It doesn't come up.
It does. And
it does?
I was doing it earlier today double check on
We're doing it about once a week. And, you know, it's not supposed to just be like a pushback on the Me Too thing.
No,
there's
not
a play. Yeah. We want to talk about things that are going on now from a point of view. I mean, this podcast sort of started, or video podcast, because we were having like 80 texts about something.
Right.
Just something that we might see things a little bit different than it's being reported, and just talk about it.
Good. So. And Leah, you're also, you have a separate podcast that you're two-timing Nancy with. What is it called? And where's the best place to find it?
It's called Improper Etiquette, and it's on iTunes.
And Nancy, what's next for you? I mean, you had your book come out last year. It did very well in terms of conversations and sales and things like that.
And meeting some producers about it next month, which would be quite sort of cool. I'm just doing a lot of journalism right now. Tons of articles.
What is there a particular story you're chasing that you can talk about?
Yeah, but back. Okay. A couple of things. Yeah, one I'm chasing one story about a guy who was killed. He hung himself in FBI custody, and they don't want to talk about it. What happened? Mm. I'm interviewing Ron Wyden next week.
Right.
So yeah, a lot of stuff.
All right, the Oregon senator, the Democratic senator. Well, we're going to leave it there. We have been talking with Leah McSweeney and Nancy Rommelman. They have a great new video series called Me Neither at YouTube. Go type in hashtag Me Neither or Me Neither, and you'll find it. Leah also does Improper Etiquette, which you can find on iTunes. And Nancy writes frequently and all over the place, really, including a bunch of stuff recently for Reason over the past couple of months. So look for us there. This has been the Reason Podcast. I have been your host, Nick Gillespie. Please subscribe to us at iTunes or Google or Spotify, SoundCloud. Go to Reason.com, and you can subscribe there as well. Rate and review us when you do, when you listen to us. We like to get feedback and try and improve the shows as we go through this weary life. And, you know, thank you for listening, and we're going to leave it there.
Bye.